Unreal Bluegrass has brought you music from around the world for many years now, literally around the world. I like to say all music is local. Today our guest is local to me. At the end of the program, they're going to be local to you, the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. Sit and talk with them about their brand new album, Mighty Fine to Pick With You, three of the four members of the band, as we're kind of holed up in their practice area. So they're not practicing, they're just talking to me to talk to you about Mighty Fine to Pick With You, and that's going to be the first song we hear. Then we're going to get into a nice long conversation from all three of the members who are present about the music and what they bring to it and why they put everything on Mighty Fine to Pick With You. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great tune. Happens to be the cover tune on the covers I'm looking at. Mighty Fine to Pick With You, and I'm sitting here. So happy to be sitting here with most of the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. What you heard was Mighty Fine to Pick With You, and I think that's a good song, guys. We're gonna get into this album that I'm holding in my hands. I think it's a good song to kind of invite listeners and people in the audience into what the band is about, because it's about, as the band gathers together, and here comes somebody this, and we're going to pick, and everybody's picking, and even on the album cover, I think, gives a little bit of that intent where you're picking on a porch, and so everybody's going to come and pick together. So that's a great way to start it off. The Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. I'll go around and we can just introduce people whatever direction you want. But let me just say this too: people that listen to Unreal Bluegrass know this much. Unreal Bluegrass goes all over the nation. We go coast to coast. We go around the world. We've had bluegrass from Italy and Europe and Australia, all over this country. But all music is local at some point. All music is local to somebody, whether the station picks it up in another part of the world. All music is local, and this is local right now, right where we are. And that's what I think is so great about being able to sit with a great band like Forest Hill Bluegrass Band. They're just right near me. So let's start over there and do some introductions a little bit, and we'll talk about the album.
Well, I'm Rick Marksberry. I'm from Florence, Kentucky. I've lived here all of my life. I play banjo and fiddle for the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band.
That's it, you know, and people that know me know that I'm a very pedestrian banjo player, as I call myself. But I would never consider playing banjo even as poorly as I do and then playing fiddle. Those things, I know mandolin players play fiddle. I know that some players, but that's an odd, to me, just an odd combination. Tim O'Brien, I think I was doing the open back stuff, and of course fiddle, he plays everything, but banjo and fiddle, I don't understand that.
Well, I tell you what.
There's got to be a story. If there's not, make up a really good one.
Well, I don't have to make it up. It's all part of my history.
Okay.
In the early 70s, I was playing rock and roll like everybody else. I was a drummer. And so the timing thing, I always had that down. I always had good timing. And I always was able to play things by ear. In school band, I would play sax. I was given parts that I didn't really like because they were just basic bass parts, in a sense. So I would go out on the field with no music in my horn. You know, they had the little racks that hold the music. I'd just go out. Mine would be empty. And they would be doing songs like Girl from Ipanema, and I was playing the melody. I was getting down because I was hearing, like most people, I was hearing good music, big band, and pop music, that kind of stuff, that had great sax to it. I just loved the tone of my horn. But I didn't want to play tuba parts, boom, 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 that kind of thing. So I got busted for it. I almost got thrown out of the band. And so that being
said... Wait, because you didn't read the music or because you couldn't read the music?
Well, I could read the music, but I didn't take time to get the music under my skin, and that's what got me in trouble.
So you're in the marching band, and you don't have your... What is that called, by the way? I played clarinet, and I never knew what it was called.
It's just a little clip that holds music.
Okay, all right. So you're out in the marching band, and you're playing sax, and you're just feeling it, I think, or hearing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you were ever found. If you ever found out because maybe you took a little bit of a ride on something.
Well, it might have been the case. But you got to understand, I was outside on a football field and about 6 feet apart or more from everybody else. We were only a 45-piece band, so we had to spread pretty good. The band director sensed that something didn't sound right, so he started doing each section And then it got down to the sax section, and it was like...
I've seen this in the movies. I've seen this in the movies, by the way.
Yeah, it was like, you're the one. So, he threatened to kick me out of the band, which by that point, I was so into rock and roll and playing guitar, it wasn't like a big loss for me. I mean, I love sax, but I was ready to move on. Went down to Appalachia, heard a clawhammer banjo player for the first time, and it was like... being like Saul on the road to Damascus, all of a sudden, what you thought was just kind of a throwaway style of music being played live became very real to me, touched the nerve. So I came back with the idea that I'd kind of dabble in banjo. Well, a year later, I was at Georgetown College and heard bluegrass. I heard Flat and Scruggs. I heard Monroe all on the campus radio. I kind of went off in a different direction than most people because I wanted to play banjo. I love the tone of the fiddle. And so over the next 10 years, I became a multi-instrumentalist. I play banjo, fiddle, steel guitar. Of course, I can play mandolin because of the fiddle. And for a while, I was doing a lot of lead guitar. I was doing a lot of Tony and Clarence White type stuff and mandolin. And I had a whole big background in fiddle tunes. So that's, I love the fiddle tunes. And like the way Monroe or J.D. Crowe or Tony would interpret them, more of a modern approach. So I kind of got back into banjo. I let the banjo kind of go like in the 80s. And I kind of got back into it 10 years ago. And so I thought, well, I like Flat and Scruggs. I like J.D., but everybody's doing that, and you just have to take a number and wait, so to speak. So I thought, I started figuring out these fiddle tunes. And from playing instrumental guitar with a finger pick and open tunings, I kind of had this whole idea of how to finger pick a guitar and so forth. So all that played into shaping my banjo. And so unlike most people that kind of go through the Scruggs and JD mode, I kind of came in the other way from fiddle tunes and open tune guitars and stuff like that, dadgad tunings, G tunings, things like that. So that had a real profound directional shift for my banjo playing. So you're playing a
more of a melodic style as you adapt fiddle tunes to banjo, which is what Bill Keith did at a level that no humans do.
I would think probably closer to like what I'm aspire to. I'm not saying I'm there, but I aspire to be like Bob Black, who played for Bill Monroe.
That's right,
Of course, Alan Monday with the Country Gazette. That little bit of banjo monkey hornpipe is sparkle is kind of probably inspired by Alan.
I'm a big Alan Monday fan.
Yeah.
So you had me at Alan Monday. Let's just say that. All right. So I understand that progress. All right. Good. Thanks. Thank you so much. I want to move back around the room here. We're going to pretend that if we need to have Wayne here, somebody can play his part. But right now, there's three of the four members of Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. Let's continue on the line. We'll get back to the album a little bit, but continue down this line.
I'm Brian Buckley. I'm the guitar player in the band. I also play mandolin. Wayne and I have a duo we call the Jamgrass Duo, and we switch back and forth between mandolins and guitars, and sometimes two mandolins, sometimes two guitars, or usually one of each. And I met Wayne. Wayne Leeson is the mandolin player who couldn't be here today, but he came to a farmer's market I was playing at with the band I used to be in. And he sat there and watched, and we started talking. And I realized, this guy's kind of an interesting guy, this mandolin player. And it turns out he lived a half a mile from my house. And so I went over to his house, and I said, well, okay, so what are we going to play? And he goes, well, how about Well, I Needn't by Thelonious Monk? I said, well, let's do that. I went from Thelonious Monk to Norman Blake, so we just went back and forth on picking songs out that we could do, and eventually came up with this very broad, weird repertoire of music. And then, after a while, I got introduced to Rick, and then we started getting together as a trio to play just to practice stuff up, and then Jerry came along, and formed the band, the Little Sales Bluegrass Band.
And Wayne, who's not here, and as I told everyone before we started, I've known Wayne as long as I've known Jerry Schreffer, who we're going to get to, and I've known Wayne longer than I've known on any of you, including Jerry. It goes back to college days. It goes back to the old bluegrass scene in Cincinnati, a place called Aunt Maudie's, and all those places like that. So I've known Wayne when he was even taller than he is now, I think. You know, we all shrink, so we've got some age on us. But your guitar stuff, and then we've talked a little bit about this song, and I want to play it before we get out of here, it'll be toward the end, but this old D28 song that you've written is, I know that I've heard you talk about this before, and I want you to do a lead into it later, but before we do that, let's talk a little bit about, we talked about Wayne getting a newer instrument. There's this instrument acquisition syndrome, I think of the initials IAS, that we all go through. We all go through. And your song, your original song here, My Old D28, is one of those. And we'll talk about the song in depth. But so I want any of you guys want to talk about your instruments. We all buy more. I think this is the saying that I fall back to, and it's relation to a whole other issue. But I would say this. I have more banjos than I need, but I don't have as many banjos as I want. And that's, I think, that would follow probably to you and guitars, and probably to you and banjos and mandolins and fiddles. But the one song you wrote on here that is specifically about acquiring,
that song. Guitar came out of nowhere. I at the time I was playing an Ovation guitar. That was my first good guitar, and it played like an electric guitar, and I thought I was on top of the world with that thing. But I always wanted a Martin.
Why is that? Most people who listen to Unreal Bluegrass understand that, but why did you always want a Martin guitar? What was the sound that you heard in your head that you thought you could only get from that?
It's the depth of tone that they had, and I had, in my mind, there was no way I was ever going to get one. It wasn't going to happen because I didn't have the money. They were too expensive, and when I was working at the bar, my dad's bar was in Laughlin, Ohio. It's called the King Bee. And I was working there, and this guy just came in, and he set the guitar case up on the bar. That's literally how that happened. And he opened it up, and I said, "What are you trying to do? What's the purpose of you bringing this thing in here?" And he goes, "Well, I want to sell it to you." And so that's how that started.
Just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's almost like that guitar, when we hear the song, we're going to hear it before we get out of the session, but it's almost like this guitar was coming to find you.
I tell people that. I didn't find it. It found me. Yeah. And there was a while there after I bought it. And the guy that I was playing with at the time, when I got it, look what I got. He was, his face changed. He was visibly like, "Oh my God, you bought a Martin. I can't believe you got a Martin and I don't have one." So, and I was like, "Yeah, well, this is really cool." But I was a young kid, and I've used it a little bit. You know, it was a little beat up when I got it, but then it became unplayable. I mean, the strings were about a good half inch off the neck, and it still sounded good, but it was impossible to play.
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, I went and sent it back to the Martin factory.
Oh, did you?
And they went and took a look at it. The braces were loose. The neck needed to be reset. All this work, and it cost me like $750 to get the thing fixed. But when it came back, it was like a brand new instrument. But in the meantime, while that thing was away, I had a Guild guitar that I was playing that one. My wife surprised me with. I had been looking at it, and I came home from work one day, and I had a gig that night, and I had asked her to buy me a set of strings. And she was real, "Oh, no,
honey, they were stuck on this guitar, but you could take them off."
She was like, I can't do that. I can't." I said, "Just get this. Just tell them you want this." And when I got home, she said, "Are you going to put the strings on? Are you going to put the strings on?" And I was like, "No, I'm not going to put them. I wanted them for a spare set for tonight." "You got to put them on. You got to put them on now." And there's this... My Martin case was on the floor there.
Every guy in this band has the same story where the wife would, "You go ahead, finish the story."
And so,
makes perfect sense.
So I'm looking at the case and I thought, I didn't have that case on the floor.
Yeah.
And so I opened it up and there's that Guild guitar. She bought the guitar. And she didn't buy a string, she bought the guitar. So It says,
same thing happened to me with my own banjo. I wanted banjo strings. My wife comes home with a brand new own banjo. Well, I think we've all faced that.
Well, the
I'm
problem
kidding.
Is,
come on, man. I'm kidding. This story is not what I've ever heard before with the kid.
The problem is it doesn't happen enough.
It doesn't happen at all.
It's like nobody, they don't, you'd say, well, you know, it's a new year. It's isn't it time to go out there and buy me another one? I've been very lucky with guitars. Yeah. I've been very fortunate.
The Guild guitar, I think, and Jerry I know has a Taylor. I think of Guild and Taylor, amazing guitars, but I think of them more, as you were describing the sound of the Martin that you were looking for. Guild and Taylor are more to me in a folk, more of a singer accompanist thing. As was the Martin guitar. And you
they
know
have
too.
An even sound where the Martin, you get more of that response and snap on
that's
the
good.
Bass.
That's good. That's good. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's not, of the years I've been doing this, I've not heard that story where someone comes home and says, here's a guitar. Sweetie, that's a wonderful thing. It's a great story.
It was a beautiful thing. I still have it.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be hard to explain if that one's gone. I trade it up. No, wait a minute.
I'll be living in a little box someplace on the side of the
That's right. That's right. You mentioned your connection with Wayne, who's not here today, so we can say whatever we want about Wayne.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, let's go for it.
And there's a tune on the thing, which is called Hillbilly Jazz, that Wayne wrote. And you were talking, you were throwing out some pretty serious jazz connection with Thelonious Monk. This is not a Monk-type tune, but it's definitely swing. So there's a feeling of swing in, I think, a lot of things that Wayne does that I've seen him do. And this is exactly that. The Hillbilly Jazz is exactly the type of a swing tune with bluegrass instrumentation.
Well, he always focuses it on the people that are around him and in the instrumentation that he mentions in the song. It's focused on the people that are there. It wasn't just something where, okay, you know, hillbilly jazz, we got the saxophone, he's like the mandolin, guitar, bass, and, you know, and the banjo, and that's how Wayne thinks, but he always tries to include that because that's what he is. He always thinks about everybody else, and he wants everybody to be in, you know, good feeling about how things are.
If I might jump in here,
Jerry's jumping in now.
I asked.
We haven't introduced Jerry Schrupper yet. He's my friend, but he's jumping in.
Welcome to the secret lair of the bluegrass band here. I asked Wayne one time, what's the inspiration behind this song because it's so different? And he's a piano teacher, among other things. He plays a lot of different instruments, and he teaches music. And he said, well, basically, it started as a bass left-hand piano exercise. Mm-hmm. And from there, I got inspired to write the song. So that's why it has that bassy jazz, the jazz walking bass kind of line in it.
I like it.
Wayne.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I used to listen to an album that came out on Flying Fish back in
Jazzgrass.
It was called Hillbilly Jazz. It had Vassar Clements and Doug Jernigan, a whole bunch of people.
Records, yeah.
And so that term resonated with him, I know. And it was somewhat bluegrass. Dave Bromberg was on it, all these different people. And it went kind of back and forth between a bluegrass sound, a jazz sound, all this kind of stuff. It was kind of the forerunner to like what the Time Jumpers are doing today. You know, Blues for Dixie and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that title resonated with Wayne, and he always kind of had this affinity for these. Jazz is like an ancillary path that he likes to go down on, and like Jerry said, he'll kind of, ideals will come to him on piano, and he'll translate it into the mandolin.
There are 15 tunes, right? No, 12.
12.
My 12 looks like a 5 when I write it down. There's 3 instrumentals that I recall and made notes about, and we've kind of swung through the band a little bit. We know Wayne's not here, but Jerry Schreffer is here, and Jerry's a longtime friend of mine, a full disclosure on that. And Jerry, with all these 12 songs, they would all just be meandering over without the anchor of the bass that Jerry provides.
That's right.
Jerry, I'm going to throw it over to you for a minute.
Well, my story starts about 2 years ago with these clowns. I was fortunate because for some reason they needed a bass player, And a mutual friend said, "Oh, you want to play bass with some guys?" And I said, "Well, yeah. Well, I'd entertain that. It would be a lot of fun." And so the next day I get a phone call from Wayne, and he says, "I understand that you want to play bass with the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. We're looking for a bass player." And I said, "Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that would be a lot of fun." And he said, "Okay, let me send you our song list. I'll email it to you." That afternoon, I got a 4-page list of their catalog of songs they do, broken down by fiddle tunes and banjo tunes. And there were 120 songs on the list with all the keys listed. And of the 120 songs that they do, I had actually played bass on 4. I knew the titles of 5 more. So I'm looking at less than 10 songs out of 120. And he said, "Oh, by the way, we're going to play a gig in 2 weeks. Can you be ready?"
I remember when this news came to Jerry. And I remember the sound, because we were still doing it. Jerry does the producing and the editing on Unreal Bluegrass, and he's been a friend of mine for eons. But I remember when that packet hit him, because I remember the sound of his voice. And he had a lot to do, and we were still doing things, and we were going to Grey Fox, and he had all these things, and he had all these great new songs. And knowing how Jerry is, he was going to learn them all or die trying. But I do remember that event. And now you go ahead. I didn't interrupt. Take your story.
Well, you know, I'm a folk singer by hobby, and for years, and played 12 string. And I came down here to Kentucky in 1980, and I had to switch. And by 2000, I was actually starting to learn to play the bass. But when you play jam bass, garage bass, it's one thing. These guys, their songs are a little progressive. And being the kind of person I am, musically trained, I had to chart everything out before I could actually play it. And once I charted it and could see it, it takes 30 seconds to look at it, and I can play the whole song. But I had to see the structure, because that's the way I was trained. And it has been a real fun challenge keeping... Every week they add 2 more songs to the list, you know?
And you make a good point. There's only one... You do a Dylan tune on here,
yeah,
which I think is great.
Well, he needed the money.
And it probably was the impetus for him to sell his book. You know, he probably thought, now I got the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band doing my back pages. Sell. He probably called his broker and said, sell.
Yeah, there you go.
And that brought in the big dollars for him.
Yep.
Dylan gets covered a lot. More and more, you know, I'll get all kinds of music on Real Bluegrass to listen to and play, and I listen to all of it. There's more and more covers sneaking in. It started a long time ago. Charlie Daniels did, he was at the beginning, did an entire album of Bob Dylan covers.
Yeah.
So here's a cover of a great Bob Dylan tune. It's done in a bluegrass fashion, which I appreciate what the band does on it. But is there, besides this legend place that Bob has, what is it about certain tunes that Bob does? Let's make it simpler. What pulled you to My Back Pages?
Okay, well, I played a lot of acoustic guitar in that dad tuning. I had a real beautiful slow version of that song that I would do in the detuning. And the other reason I like it is because it speaks a lot about the mood today with, you know, the reaction about erasing history and going against the status quo of what is... knowledge and so forth. I don't want to go too far into that. But I felt like the song was right for the time that we're living in. Plus, I had this background from the tuned guitars and playing it fingerstyle. And then when I first did it, I had the banjo in a detuning, a little deeper sounding, kind of like John Harper's banjo. And that, for the first 6 months, I played it down low in that detuning. It was nice, but something was missing. And I got to thinking, I was driving along in the car, and just the image of the fretboard and everything was laid out, and I thought, I bet that could be done in a standard position, and like in a C position on a G-tuned banjo. So I went home and figured it out, and about a half an hour later, I had it all worked out up to speed. So what we did, we put a 2/4 time signature on it. Roger McGuinn and the Byrds had like a 4/4, and it was more a backbeat, boom, chop, boom, boom, chop. You know, we just took it and made it a 2/4 rhythm.
you made a good point there about the applicability of his topics. That
oh yeah,
it, they don't have to be specifically addressed as to a day or a time, but
right.
but it just keeps going through. It just keeps coming back around again.
Well, history is repeating itself.
It always does. It never stops.
The song's warning us
exactly.
about.
Exactly right.
Because he's the protagonist in the song, and it's his narcissism and his pride and his arrogance that's getting himself into trouble.
There are three instrumentals on the album, as I've mentioned. The one cover of Bob Dylan. We talked about some of the music that everything comes from the band except the Dylan cover. But one of the instrumentals that I want you to lead into here, whoever wants to go into it, we talked about this a little bit off the air, the banjo monkey hornpipe. Just a little bit. I want you to lead into that. We're going to play that for the audience. But interesting title. It's a great song. And I know exactly what the style is that you're hearing because I hear it what you're playing.
I was practicing a lot of melodic runs. And a lot of times my ideals are born out of just technique practicing, like doing scales and so forth. And just kind of doodling around up the neck a little bit, trying to connect all the notes to make one long run. And that kind of stood out. You know, just that opening part, it kind of stood out. And I thought, sounds like there might be a song there.
That's so the thing. I'll never get the songwriters. Oh, yeah, I thought I would write a song about a day when I'm thinking, how do you even do that? So this is the thing that comes to you, and you've discussed how other songs arrive. I don't get it.
It all didn't come at once.
Right.
The verse kind of came together like in one afternoon, but then it took like another week or two before I kind of got the B part or the chorus part.
Sure.
And I wanted something a little different that wasn't just another predictable pattern that the first part was in. I wanted something that was just a little off kelter, and I think that's what I ended up with on that second part.
That's going to be our intro. We're going to play for the audience Banjo Monkey Hornpipe. We'll be back in just a second. That was, you just heard Banjo Monkey Hornpipe, an instrumental from Forest Hills Bluegrass Band. By the way, Forest Hills is a city that actually exists up or where, I would say north of Cincinnati, maybe on the Beltway.
It's on the east side of Cincinnati.
Yeah, okay.
It's near Cherry Grove and all that on Beachmont Avenue.
Yeah.
Forest Hills. We were trying to think of a name for the band, and, you know, you go, anytime you do that, it's a terrible thing, you know, trying to find a name. And I remember just sitting there saying, what about Forest Hills Bluegrass Band? That's where we live. And Wayne looked at me and he said, I like the idea of forest and hills, because hills are in bluegrass. And I like the idea of forest. I like that. Let's do that. And so we came.
There you go. Wasn't hard. The one of the things I like about, you discussed your influences on playing banjo, as we led into Banjo Monkey Hornpipe, we talked about it again. This off of the air when we were just kind of getting set up here. There's a nice little part where there's a harmony with a mandolin and a banjo at the end that particularly jumps out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to talk just a little bit about
that. That was Wayne's idea for the most part.
And Wayne's not here. Every time I mention something, it's Wayne's idea. And Wayne was the guy that did this.
Well, Wayne knows we're going to talk great about him. So if he was here, he'd downplay himself. But we're going to build him up. So.
All right.
But Wayne's always been one for harmony. Like, you know, he always liked groups with good vocal harmony. I think instrumentally, like with his jazz, he pays close attention to harmony lines on melodic lines. I know in other styles of music that Wayne and I have been involved in, we would do lines together. In country music, steel guitar and piano, or steel guitar and regular guitar, we'd play lines together. That's real big in Texas music. And Wayne and I had done some of that in the past, so it's not surprising that he'd come up with this harmony line to kind of make it a little different.
Yeah, it's. I love the ending. I mean, I've listened to the album a lot. And I was driving over here, and I was got to that part again, and so it was time for me to come and join the band.
I just think that duet at the end of that song demonstrates the instrumental capability of the guys here in the band. They have a tightness. They have the ability to play together that's just incredible to me.
And it is. And there's so many different types of music that are folded into this. There is a waltz. There's the swing we already mentioned, the hillbilly jazz, which is a swing. There's we talked a little bit about the story of the guitar. There's a song on here that is almost 7 minutes long. that I think is one of those just gorgeous tales. It's the Western tale, oddly enough. It has that. And can you speak a little bit about that? Because it'll be played on the show at some point. Maybe not this interview session, but I'm looking at Brian to tell us a little bit about Western tale.
I lived in O'Brienville in an apartment, and I was sitting there fooling around with the guitar, and I came up with the introductory chords to it. And I thought, wait a minute, I kind of like what this sounds like. And so I'm fooling around with that, and my phone rang, and there was somebody, you know, saying they were looking for somebody else. And so I said, you got the wrong number. So then I went back, and I worked out, and then, here's the second part of the song, and it was like a transition. I hadn't figured out the words yet, because I didn't know what it was about. All I knew was I liked the way the chords were going. And then the phone rings again, and it's the same person calling and saying, I'm trying to find...
It's not the lost angel, is it, from the song on the album?
It wasn't that person.
Avoid her.
It wasn't that person. It was somebody, and right. It was like, you got to quit calling me, I'm busy. And so then I went back, and I'm fooling around with the song again. And then it rings again. And the lady says my name. She goes, you wouldn't know who... this person was, and it just turned out, it was somebody from my past that was scheming to find me again. It was like, no, I can't do this. You got to go away. And so I turned the phone off so she couldn't call back anymore. So then I got to the song, and I got back, and I started thinking the way it felt to me, and I thought, I'm feeling cowboys. And I started thinking about, well, what can this person be doing? And it's somebody who did something that really isn't ever fully explained, but committed a crime and then just got run out of town and decided, I got to go back and kill everybody. But when he gets back here, the person he wants to kill the most was already dead, and his wife was dead. The whole thing, you know, he missed out, and he actually saved himself by missing out on that part. Which led to the transition part.
I was
going to
say, there's a part of the song, and explain this as a musician and the writer of the song, where there is a part in the song where it's almost, I don't want to say it, you're going to get to that part. Explain what happens, two-thirds of the way through or whatever.
It was a way I was trying to express this complete change of mood where the song is galloping to the town. He's going there to do this deed, and then all of a sudden he finds out everything's spoiled, and it was, I was trying to think of a way to express it instrumentally where he was, you know, thoughts that are going through his head, and it was just, I was trying to, random thoughts that are not words.
Yeah.
That's what, I don't know if that makes any
sense. No, it does, because you can feel it. You can feel it in the way the music changes and the tempo of the music, but it's not an abrupt change, it just sort of, it makes that point, you know, what.
I've always felt that middle part was like a soundtrack. Was like a soundtrack to a movie. Like he's got this story.
Yeah. Okay.
And that in between thing was kind of like part of the movie soundtrack.
Yeah. What?
When I listened to it and learned the bass part to it, I tried to figure out what in the world was he doing when he wrote this. And then the more I thought about the storyline, I thought, you know, this guy is full of hatred. He wants revenge for all the bad things that were done to him. And he gets there, and it's this disappointment because everything that he... So he's going through this emotional stage of anger, transitioning to disappointment because he can't get his revenge, to actually the resolution of his feelings and accepting what had actually happened. And then turning around and galloping out of town. I mean, it's just an incredible moody transition.
It's the moody. Don't you love it when we all just volunteer to interpret your song?
Well, some of the best lies I've ever heard.
The chord progression, say it all.
We got a lot more.
You write a lot of these songs, Brian. And the one that I think that everybody would love. If you do this to an audience and you don't get a little bit of tears out of For the Dogs, then I don't know who you're singing to. I don't know who you can be singing to.
Yeah, I had a dog named Mooney, and I was sitting in my chair. It was lunchtime. Okay, Mooney, let's go outside. She got up and she did a complete spin and fell down. And I was like, what's wrong? You know, did you trip? You know, what did you do? And she got up again, did a spin, bam. And I knew something was wrong. And then she started breathing very labored. And so I ran downstairs to the phone and I called the vet. And then I hear this boom, boom, boom. You know, Mooney had crawled up to the top of the steps and fell down.
Oh,
and was halfway down the landing. And I thought, oh, my God. You know, I said, the dog fell. I got to go. You know, and I'm looking at her. And I looked at the dog and then and I said, you are dying. you can't do this. You know, you can't do it in front of me. You have to do it when I'm sleeping. But she actually died right in front of me.
Oh,
and then I decided, you know, I got to put this in some kind of words because all the guys in the band have dogs. And we don't have any more right now, but we'll get back to them.
Take your time.
But they add so much to your life. And there's this unrequited love that they always give it to you. And it doesn't matter what your mood is. They are always happy. It's that it's like the joke about, you know, what's the difference when you open the, if you put a dog in the trunk or your wife in the trunk, that thing. Your dog will be wagging its tail.
This from the man whose wife bought him a guitar and all he asked for was a set of strings.
No, wait, no, it's not that one.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right. But that it's that thing. You know.
All right.
And Wayne's waltz is a tribute to his dog, Laurel.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, listen, I've had them, and you're right. There's something about a dog that no matter what your day has been, it's always like, Even if you walk out for 10 minutes, you come back, they're so happy to see you. I don't know. We have cats. I don't know if any of you have cats, too, but we have cats and dogs. But the dog is always so thrilled. And that moment where you have to say goodbye to them is just an absolute killer. You end the song with an upbeat notion that, and when you're ready, and I think people, when they're ready in their own time, go back to the shelter, maybe. And that maybe that's speaking to more people than you. Yeah. But, you know, what's a wonderful thing to be able to do. Give them a home and that they will give you 100% of their life every second that they have.
Yep, that's it.
And as the song says, you don't have to take a shower or even comb your hair. They wag their tail no matter what.
Wayne's dog, Laurel, Wayne borrowed an album of mine years ago. He keeps bringing this up, even in concert when he introduces this song. He borrowed an album of mine, Carole King Tapestry album or something, when it first came out. And
it's okay. It's at home.
At home, I guess the dog got a hold of it and chewed on it. There were all these little dimples and holes on the record and all that. Wayne felt so bad, he went out and bought another album. Hopefully, regretfully, I was hoping he'd buy me the new Joe Walsh. Anyway, so the other day when we were introducing it, I said, well, instead of Laurel's Last Waltz, we can put in parentheses, Carol's Last Spin. Because he always brings that story up about Carol.
I want to focus on one more song before we leave. But I also want to know from the band, and you guys are getting busy again. Everybody, the Forest Hills Bluegrass Band, just like every other professional band, everything ended. And I know you guys had a lot of gigs coming up because I see them all the time, and they all ended, and now you're starting to get back out again into the area. And I want people to know where they can find the band, where they can look into buying this album we've been talking about, Mighty Fine to Pick, with you. So somebody give me that information, and I want to get to one more song before we're...
Sure, we have a Facebook page out there. It's listed as FHBB2019, because that's kind of when we formed our current version of the band. And so you can find it at FHBB2019. If you go to Facebook Marketplace and type in Forest Hills Bluegrass Band, you'll find our album is out there and listed for sale, so you can buy it off of Marketplace. If you're interested in a download or a stream, we have email addresses out there on our Facebook page. We're also listed on the Northern Kentucky Bluegrass Music Association's website as a member band, because we belong to that association.
Good. Okay, that's
and we have our own page there. Okay. So there's a lot of ways to track what we're doing. And again, if you need a download of the album, we can make arrangements for that. We can email you a download.
And I appreciate my copy's a hard copy. And there's a beautiful drawing and all the inside parts, and I appreciate that. Let me then just say, I really enjoy the music. I get now all the influences to the band. And we've been sitting here today talking with members of Forest Hills Bluegrass Band, Brian Buckley, Rick Marksberry, and Jerry Schrepp for Wayne Leeson's not here today. He did okay, though, all things considered. We didn't run him down too much for not being here. But it's great. It's a great album. Just so much fun to listen to. And I can't wait to see you. I saw you right after Jerry started with the band. And I know you've gone through major changes as far as upgrades and music, and you're playing together longer, so I can't wait to see you again live. I know that'll come up. But as we leave here, Brian, we talked a little bit about this tune of yours, this old D28. I want you to do the intro. We're going to play that, and I'll let you guys go.
Yeah, like I said earlier, when this guy walked into the bar and he put that case on there, I opened it up and I looked at this Martin and I thought, oh my goodness, who had this thing? Because where the low E string was, there was a D string. And there was a B string where the A should have been. And the bridge was pulling up and I was thinking, is this even worth it? I don't know. So I called a friend of ours, Dave Pinson. I don't know if you remember. Dave Pinson was one of the finest flat pickers ever around this area. He was from West Virginia. And he died a few years ago, but we were mentored by him. The guy I was playing with before, we'd go to Dave's house all the time. I thought, oh, that's Dave. So I called him up and I said, Dave, this guy's got this guitar. Explain what I was seeing. And Dave said, how much does he want? I said, well, he said he wants $350, but I'm going to try to see if I can get it $250. You know, he said, if you don't buy that thing, I'm coming up with right now, and I'll get it from you. So I went ahead and asked the guy. I said, well, how about $250? He said, no, this is a Martin. I got to have $350. I said, okay, if you'll hold it for
me. You insist.
If you'll hold it for me, then I'll give you the money because I get paid Friday, and then I'll give you the money. So we made an arrangement, and I got all the money to him. I got it all fixed up. And I got it fixed by Rich Hart. He was the owner of Famous Old Time Music.
He worked on my banjo.
It was over on Montgomery and Pleasant Ridge. And when I went in to pick it up, I said, okay, how much? And he said, well, $60 for the repair, or I'll give you $650 for the guitar. And I thought, if he's offering me $650, I know it's worth twice as much.
Yeah,
this was like in 1977.
Yeah,
so I had to go to work. I got the guitar, paid him the $60, and I brought it back to the bar. And I'm sitting in the bar playing it because there's nobody in there on a Saturday morning. And then here comes Mike, the guy that sold me the guitar, with his brother and a friend. And Mike goes, how do you like that, Martin? And I said, I love this thing. I am so happy. And he goes, I took you. He goes, I won that in a card game from Pee Wee. It was only $100. I took you. And his friends and his brother started laughing. And I said, well, you know, I just got it fixed. And the guy that fixed it offered me $650 for it. And his face dropped. And he said, you knew. And I said, yes, I did.
And
he was getting red faced and he had a terrible temper. And his friends and his brother started laughing at him now. And that was not a good thing. And I said, wait a minute, Mike, slow down. You won. You got $250 more than you expected.
That's right.
I got a Martin. We both won.
That's right.
And every day I saw him after that, I'll give you $350 for that guitar, right?
Let me ask you this, and we're going to cut to that tune, this old D28, which I really love. The story, you hit on a lot of it. When you sent it, did you send it back to Martin for?
Yeah, I did.
Did they have a story? Usually they have a pretty good history of the serial numbers. Could they tell you anything about where it had been or where it was originally?
The guitar was owned by Johnny Roy. Was a country singer back in the 70s at a country. He was the original owner.
Okay.
And I don't know how it ended up with this guy that was one of our customers named Pee Wee. But somehow Pee Wee got the guitar, and then these guys had a card game. Pete, all, we didn't have the money.
You know, all to your benefit.
He got the guitar.
All to your benefit. All right. Thanks, guys. Forest Hill Bluegrass Band. We will cut out to this old D28, which we've talked about before, but it's such a great story. It's about an instrument. We all like instruments. So we'll play that one. I'll thank you guys for having time available to chat about it. And it's been a good time. Can't wait to see you out with the new everything working again, all four
thank
cylinders.
Thank you so much for having us on your show.
You're yeah, thank you,
welcome.
Steve.
You're very welcome. Thanks
thank
a lot,
you
guys.
For visiting our practice studio.
I've been here before.
Yeah, it's cool.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. Thanks to Forest Hill Bluegrass Band. Now you know them. Now they're local to you.